1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio. For three decades now, the first person stories of and by the greatest rock musicians in history. I'm Red Beard, your conductor on this rock and roll train. And today in the studio, it's the 1978 Grammy Award winning album of the year by Billy Joel.
I don't care what you say anymore, this is my.
When I write one song, I write a song in reaction to the song I've just written. Then I write another song in reaction to that one. So to me, they have to all kind of live with each other.
She's so good with her stiletto. You don't really mind the pain. You don't mind the pain. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
It would be easier if people, instead of trying to think of my work as isolated pop songs that are kind of shoved together on a record, to think of each album as almost like a musical or a movie or a Broadway show. Hi, this is Billy Joel in the studio.
In 1977, with his back against the ropes of his career and time about to expire on his record company's long-suffering patience with meager sales, Billy Joel, a piano-playing singer, songwriter, and former welterweight boxer from Long Island, landed a musical haymaker with the 7 million seller The Stranger. Suddenly, Billy Joel had become the top-selling musician in Columbia Records' long-storied history, and a couple of Grammy Awards helped to solidify his new stature as a recording artist. But like a prize fighter, Billy Joel sensed that he'd be called upon to defend his newly won acclaim. So barely a year after the Stranger album, Billy Joel delivered the second of his 1-2 punches. 52nd Street unintentionally embellishes the Broadway overtones of its predecessor, writes Stephen Thomas Erlewine on AllMusic.com. That isn't necessarily bad, since Joel's strong suit turns out to be showmanship. He dazzles with his melodic skills and his enthusiastic performances. He also knows how to make a record, end quote. Here's Billy Joel with me in the studio.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. The reason I signed with the record company, I went with the Big Red, Columbia Records, was because of artists like Bob Dylan and Paul Simon, who were, to me, they were real artists, and they were long-term artists. They were career artists. They weren't just one-hit wonders. Now, the hipper label, in the 60s was Atlantic. I mean, Atlantic had Cream. They had Led Zeppelin. They had all the great R&B artists. They had all the new English acts around Atlantic. But Columbia had long-term career artists like Bob Dylan. I was signed to Columbia Records. This is the era of the singer-songwriter.
That's true.
Now, and I know, and anyone else who's studied the history of the music business, pop music especially, is that the writers really are the people who have longevity in the business. All stardom, all hit records, even hit videos, it's all material driven. You have to have the song before you have anything. So if you're a writer, you've got a pretty good chance at longevity to begin with. And I think Columbia Records was a company that lent itself to a singer-songwriter relationship. To this day, I still don't think of myself as a singer. I think of myself as a piano player-songwriter. Musician-composer, how about that? Musician-slash-composer.
Do you have that printed on a business card?
I should. Musician-slash-composer. No, just written right now, it's slash.
Or how about musician-slasher?
Slasher-composer. Well, no.
was a victim of circumstance. I still belong.
First hit from Billy Joel's 52nd Street called My Life. Billy told me how he dealt with the enormous expectations following the record-breaking success of the Stranger album.
I always made it clear to management, producers, record company executives, don't try to tell me what to write because the relationship is over. You're gonna terminate the artist, which is really what you want. If the artist is intrigued, if the artist is interested, then that means the artist is motivated. That means you're either gonna get great art out of this artist, or you're gonna get a great failure. But you're still gonna get that artist's undivided attention. You're gonna get 100% of his energy. So an artist must be interested. And I'm a writer, so what intrigues me to write? Well, let's see, doing something different. That's what keeps my interest going. I have an attention span, which is, you know, about 20 seconds.
And Billy Joel learned well, taking cues during his musical apprenticeship from all directions.
We were all of us Rolling Stones fans. We grew up listening to Stones, and when we were in our first bands, playing Rolling Stones songs at parties, in nightclubs, and bars, at Sweet 16s, and... But you always had these Keith Richards, Brian Jones guitar lines. Under my thumb. Or you had the last time.
Oh, that's a great way. You can listen to that all day, can't you?
Absolutely.
It's kind of circular.
That's it.
It can kind of go on forever.
That's right. There's this magical, jangly guitar thing that the Stones were so good at. Yeah. I mean, look, Keith Richards continually says he took everything he knows from Chuck Berry. I mean, I think he's an honest man. I cop from Ray Charles, I cop from the Beatles, I cop from Beethoven, I cop from people I admire, absolutely.
You cop from the best.
But it's me. It's me because I can't do it like they can, and I screw it up, and my screw up is what makes it original.
She cuts you once, she cuts you twice, still you believe. The wound is so fresh, you can taste the blood, but you don't have strength to leave. You've been bought, you've been sold, you've been locked outside the door. But you stand there pleading with your insides bleeding, cause you deep down want some more. When she says she wants forgiveness, masquerade. She's so good with her stiletto, you don't even see the blade. You don't see the blade. Oh, she cuts you hard, she cuts you deep. She's got so much skill. She's so fascinating that you're still there waiting when she comes back for the kill. You've been slashed in the face, you've been left there to bleed. You wanna run away, but you know you're gonna stay, cause she gives you what you need. And then she says she needs affection, while she searches for the vein. She's so good with her stiletto, you don't really mind the pain.
Terrific in its use of dynamics, space, and imagery. That's Billy Joel from the album 52nd Street with the song called Stiletto. Coming up next, Billy Joel fondly remembers growing up when New York City was known as the capital of baseball. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with Billy Joel for the 40th anniversary of 52nd Street.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Billy Joel with Redbeard.
Thanks, Billy. 52nd Street, which was number one in America for 8 consecutive weeks and eventually was awarded the Grammy Award for Album of the Year, 1978. Mind you, all of this was barely a year after rewriting the record books for his label with the success of the Stranger album. Billy Joel's poise and artistic focus in the midst of such dizzying success was notable.
Some of that has to do with the fact that I've been kicking around, as you said, paying my dues for a while. And when the success came, I was prepared for it. I wasn't an overnight sensation. I didn't have a success with my first record. Actually, I started recording in the 60s with a couple of local bands. And I'd been really recording since about 65.
Wow.
When I was 16. So, and Piano Man was a turntable hit, maybe not so much a big commercial record as people think. It was a turntable hit in 74. And then between 74 and The Stranger, you're talking about 75, 76, 77. So I was kind of laboring in obscurity to an extent. And when The Stranger album did hit, it became crystal clear to me what I was going to do. I was pretty well a professional performer, musician, writer, and it was also a time of life, I think, where my instincts were keen. It was sort of like, I guess, when a rookie breaks big in the majors and just has a great couple of years. I mean, that's what happened. Everything becomes very clear to you what you should do. You know, hopefully you make the right moves.
We get some money and we buy a cheap wine. Sit on the corner and have a holiday. Hide the bottle when the cop goes by. Talk about who women and lie, lie, lie. Oh, my other world is just a half a mile away. The lights crawl on the roof and then I hit the night. I should be sleeping, but tonight I just can't stay. I've given everybody so much time. Now I need a moment that's my eye. Oh, my other world is just a half a mile away. Transistor on and let the music play. I try to keep the family satisfied. It's gotta be more to life than just try, try, try. Oh, my other world is only half a mile away.
Just a half a mile away.
Let's talk about Phil Ramone. When did you first work with Phil Ramone? Do you remember which?
I first worked with Phil when we made the Stranger album. It was the first time I actually got to record with a guy of that magnitude. I had talked about working with Phil back when we were doing the Turnstiles album. I met him. And Phil was not a bona fide producer. He was an engineer. He was the engineer par excellence that a lot of people used. He was on a lot of records. And he was working with Paul Simon at the time, where it was, I think it was a co-production deal. It's very nebulous what a producer is, what people decide to call themselves on an album. Executive producer usually means that they didn't do anything. Producer could be the guy who, as soon as you see executive something, you know the guy's so far upstairs.
He played golf.
That's right. He was an executive who kind of wanted his name on the record. But a producer can be someone who really puts an imprint on an album and guides an artist and makes the record what it is, or someone who just suggests something once in a while and is kind of there and knows how to twiddle a knob here and there. We always admired Phil. All the musicians admired Phil because of his, you know, he's a technician. He's not just some Hollywood guy with a title who sweeps into the room with a cape and talks about, you know, concepts. Phil was a hands-on guy. He was, we respect technicians. Musicians respect technicians because musicians are technicians too. We have an axe. We have this box, or we have this thing that we fiddle with, and we get it to sound a certain way. Technicians do the same thing. They have their knobs and their buttons, and they make things sound a certain way too. So there's an understanding and a respect, which is sometimes why musicians have a tough time with singers. Because singers don't play an act. Singers just kind of come in and scream on key. So, you know, musicians kind of sit there because we have our axes. So he's like, oh, well, this guy's just going to come in and scream on key. Big deal, you know.
If you search for tenderness, it isn't hard to find. You can have the love you need to live. But if you look for truthfulness, you might just as well be blind. It always seems to be so hard to give. Honesty is such a lonely word. Everyone is so untrue. I can always find someone to say they sympathize if I wear my heart out on my sleeve. But I don't want some pretty face to tell me pretty lies. All I want is someone to believe. Tell me, where else
can I turn? 'Cause you're the one that I depend upon. Honesty is such a lonely word, where everyone is so untrue. Honesty is hardly ever heard, and mostly what I need from you.
I was never really aware of anyone pressuring me. And if anyone had tried to tell you the truth, I would have told them to go jump in a lake. I would have used much stronger language than that. But for purposes of radio, we'll say, you know, take a long walk off a short pier. It made them nervous. I'm sure it made them nervous.
They may not have had the moxie to verbalize it. But remember, you're the guy that wrote, "Don't Go Change It."
Yeah, can we have another "Just the Way You Are"? That's an unspoken pressure that's there. And you know, the funny thing is, when I did 52nd Street after The Stranger, I thought that was a complete different approach.
It was. It was. But it, for some reason, it was enough.
It was close enough.
Enough
to The Stranger.
of a thread.
Yeah. Because it was jazzier than the Stranger album, and there was a little more risk taken, I think, in some crazy songs that were not going to be singles, like a song like "Zanzibar" or "Until the Night."
I never ask you where you go. After I leave you in the morning, we go our different ways. Separate situation. It's not that easy anymore. Today I do what must be done. I give my time to total strangers, but now it feels as though the day goes on forever, more than it ever did before.
And wonder, how can we when the sun goes down and the day is over, when the last of the light has gone, as they pour into the street, I will be getting closer, closer. As the cars turn their headlights on, as they're closing it down, I'm gonna open it up, and while they're going to sleep, we'll just be starting to talk.
I'm just beginning to feel, I'm just beginning to give, I'm just beginning to feel, I'm just beginning to live. Before I leave you again, before the light of the dawn, before this evening can end, I have been waiting so long.
Certainly an homage to the classic Righteous Brothers Brill Building sound. That's Billy Joel's powerful Until the Night from the album 52nd Street. Coming up next, Billy Joel recounts his resistance to formula. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and get a lot more, including live Billy Joel at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Billy Joel in the studio, the number one selling Grammy album of the year 1978, 52nd Street.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Billy Joel with Redbeard.
The 1978 number one selling Grammy album of the year, 52nd Street. This album's 2 million sales in its first month, you heard me, was a stunning measure of Billy Joel's popularity, which allowed him entree to perform later in places that were icons of his childhood, such as Madison Square Garden, Yankee Stadium in the 90s, and in 2008 for the closing of Shea Stadium.
It's really amazing to play at Yankee Stadium, where I went as a kid to see the Yankees. You know, I saw Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and
Bobby
Yogi Berra. Yeah,
Yogi.
These great players. When I was a real little kid, I was actually a Brooklyn Dodger fan. It was like one of they were like the Mets, you know. They were like a losing team, but they'd pull it off. And then they moved to California in 1957 or
58.
Broke my heart. I was 9 years old. I was just like distraught. And I not only switched teams, I switched leagues. I jumped to the American League because the Giants left too. Giants, which
That's
were
right.
another great team. They went to the West Coast, so I became a Yankee fan. Playing in that stadium was amazing. I mean, I went back and looked at the monument with Babe Ruth and...
Maris back there.
Roger Maris, Mickey Mantle, Bill Dickey, Casey Stengel. It's just amazing, amazing wall. And, you know, the crowd was, I mean, the hometown crowd, they're rooting for. But I was born in the Bronx, too.
And that's where the stadium is?
The stadium is in the Bronx. It's not the greatest neighborhood in the world. It's a little difficult. People aren't used to going there. And there was some nightmares as far as the traffic went, but this was had to be a highlight, you know, for doing any kind of hometown gig. I mean, you know, what more are you going to do? What are we going to play now? You know, just New York State in general, you know, set up in Albany and charge everybody a dollar who crosses the New York border.
Park Avenue clothes. You had the Dom Perignon. sorry, but don't come bitching to me. Because you had to be a big shot, didn't you? You had to open up your mouth. You had to be a big shot, didn't you? All your friends were so knocked out. You had to have the last word last night. You know what everything's about. You had to have a white hot spotlight. You had to be a big shot last night.
But amidst the dream come true of playing two nights at Yankee Stadium, a shard of reality was present for William Martin Joel, because another Billy Martin, Joel's boyhood hero as a Yankee player and then the feisty manager of the ball club, had died in an off-season accident.
I heard you come up with a great line. I always wanted to play Yankee Stadium, but I didn't have the arm.
Yeah. Well, I was in Little League, too. You know, I played, I was shortstop. Line.
Me too.
And they moved me to second base.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah. You got a rag arm.
Yeah, I didn't have the arm.
No, me neither.
Just didn't have a great arm, no. But I made it to Yankee Stadium. My idol was Billy Martin when I was a kid. My middle name is Martin, William Martin Joel. And I relate to Billy Martin because he was always a troublemaker. He was always a big mouth. He was always in some kind of hot water.
Always.
And he'd stir it up. I mean, Mickey Mantle was a great athlete, but kind of a boring guy.
He never said a word, no.
Yeah.
No.
And the same with guys like Maris and Hank Bauer.
Nice.
These guys were all kind of crew-cut, very conservative types. And Billy was always taking him out, taking him these joints when they'd get into swing outs. And, you know, that was Billy Martin. He was always mixing it up. So I related to that, especially when I was in school, because I was kind of the class clown.
Didn't you perform for a while early on in the, maybe when you're out in the West Coast? Using just Billy Martin as
Bill
a,
Martin.
Bill Martin.
Yeah, Bill Martin of the keyboards.
As a stage name?
Yeah. That's my middle name.
Wow. Well, how did you feel when it was Christmas Day when Billy died? What went through your head?
I couldn't believe that he actually died. Somebody like that to me was
bigger
just
than
like
life.
Yeah, invincible, indestructible. I mean, there he was in an auto, in a truck, and it can't be. He's got to come back somehow. You know, like Steinbrenner's going to bring him back somehow.
Steinbrenner's going to bring him back.
Yeah, I was very sad. I was really, really sad when I heard about that. We were upstate at the time. I think we were on tour. But, his wife came to the gigs, and I dedicated a show to him. Dedicated the second night to Billy Martin. And
at the Yankee Stadium?
At the Yankee Stadium.
But even then, Billy was aware of the ever-flowing river of rock and roll.
What were you hearing in the clubs around New York City? What was going on?
Oh, that was the height of punk and new wave. 77 to 80 was Elvis Costello, Sex Pistols, Clash, Blondie, Television, a lot of stuff. The New York Dolls were out around then. There was a lot of vital new music going on at that time, which was probably another reason for me changing the kind of music I was going to do. I was obvious there was all kinds of new forces out there. There were all kinds of interesting, vital new music made by a whole other generation of people. I thought it was good. That kind of music, I wasn't a big fan of punk. I got the reason for its existence, which was really to give the music industry an enema, because you had these overblown bands like Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Yes. You just had a lot of bloated dinosaurs hanging around. And punk was really wanted to bring rock back to its roots.
I play nights in the Spanish part of town. I got music in my hands. Work is hard to find, but that don't get me down. Rosalinda understands. Crazy Latin dancing solo down in Herald Square. Searching for you everywhere. Though I'll never be there, I know what I would see there. I can always find my Cuban skies in Rosalinda's eyes. Smiles, she gives everything to me. When she's all alone, she cries. I'd do anything to take away her tears, because they're Rosalinda's eyes. Señorita, don't be lonely, I will soon be there. Oh, Havana, I've been searching for you everywhere. I got a chance to make it. It's time for me to take it. I'll return before the fire dies in Rosalinda's eyes. Puerto Rican band, union wages, wedding clothes. Hardly anyone has seen how good I am. Rosalinda says she knows. Crazy Latin dancing solo down in Herald Square. Oh, Havana, been searching for you everywhere. Though I'll never be there, I know what I would see there. I can always find my Cuban skies in Rosalinda's eyes.
searching for you everywhere. I've got a chance to make it. It's time for me to take it, and I'll return before the fire dies and Rosalinda's eyes.
Rosalinda's Eyes comes from Billy Joel's 52nd Street album, marking its 40th anniversary as the number one seller in the U.S. for 8 consecutive weeks on its way to the Grammy Award for 1978 Album of the Year. But lest you think that Billy Joel writes and sings for the money, the awards, and the fame, I'll let you be the proverbial fly on the wall in the studio. Back when he was married to Christie Brinkley, and their daughter Alexa was only 4 years old. Here's the real payoff for Billy Joel.
You write it, then you arrange it, then you play it in the studio, then you do post-production, then you mix it, then you master it, then you go out on the road and you play it.
You rehearse it before you play it.
Then you play it endlessly, and at that point, you really, unless it comes on the radio, which is always a thrill, you don't program it yourself. You don't pop it on the table. Like Christy loves to play Billy Joel tapes, and I'm always pulling them out of the, you know, cassette player, the CD player. All right, I've had enough of that. And she goes, but Alexa loves your stuff, and I want to hear your stuff. I said, you know what? Play it when I'm not around, because it's difficult for me, and not because I don't like it, it's because I'm tired of it. You know, I've been burnt out on it. One of the biggest kicks I've ever had was hearing Alexa, who's 4, walking around the house singing, "Sing us a song in the piano, man. Sing us a song tonight." Which I wrote in 1973. And here's this little boombox walking around. I never imagined when I was singing this song that my daughter would be walking around with this cute little Donald Duck voice singing "Piano Man." And there it was. And it's like, Daddy wrote that. You know, she knows. She knows. It's pretty cool.
You better believe it. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Billy Joel. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.